Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And I was telling our listeners on KTTH, the ones that are privy to the first three, the hasty three, I got to figure out something that rhymes better than that. Anyway, that first 3 minute opening that we have with just KTTH, based on the way that the timing on the show lays out, and just wish I had more to report for you. More, this is an extension of what we're watching here, and we're jumping right into the market update. What we're watching here is just yet another further extension of all the stupidity and crap that we've watched over the last 6 months. Meaning that you're just going to continue, like we were joking around last week. Of course, this is still going on because this thing looks like it is going to coil till the very last moment. And what I mean by that, guys, is when you look at the setup of the market, when you look at the threats that inflation is bringing on, when you look at all the accounting gimmickry, and I'm not talking outright flat fraudulent accounting. I'm just saying it's a typical occurrence you get at the end of bull markets, which is, you get deep into bull markets. This is the longest bull market of all time. If anybody tells you this is a new bull market, just laugh at them. It's nonsense. You cannot call an end to a bull market a year in a year where the market closes up 16.2% higher than it started. Okay, that doesn't qualify, which is what happened last year. But this is the longest bull market on record. You got Kathy Wood out today saying that she thinks it's going to go for till 2038. So it'll be a 40-year bull market. So that's seems very rational, very level-headed. To go really good with her $3.5 trillion outlook on Tesla stock. Tesla's another one, guys. Come out, report their earnings. Another interesting deal. If you look at the number of cars Tesla made over the course of the year versus the number of cars that they sold about 13,000 more cars than they built, and yet their inventory rose. I haven't done a deep dive into it. Maybe there's an easy explanation, but just classic Tesla, right? They're going to stretch the bounds of legal accounting. If you still sub out real costs, if you sub out government subsidies, they're still burning cash. They still can't make any money building cars. Despite the headlines, don't look at it. You got to follow cash. It's the madness continues. And I think, at least it's not a crap market anymore. I was telling the people on the first 3 minutes of the show that there's days when you do this that are just frustrating, that just irritate you. This is one of those days. So I'm trying not to be too morose. I'm trying to ride it. Right? I tell my kids all the time, you control your emotions. You control your emotions. Right? We control how we react to things. So I'm trying to work my way through it. It's hard if you're a rationally minded person for an extended period of time watching nonsense that has absolutely zero economic value, has absolutely zero fundamental value, trading at prices that absolutely make zero sense. And yet it keeps continuing. The fundamental story of these companies doesn't matter. Snapchat, bring it up today. Snapchat stock misses revenue and drops 30% in the after hours. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if it was back positive by tomorrow. Why? Because it doesn't matter. Nobody that was buying Snapchat gives a darn about their revenues and profitability, or they never would have bought it in the first place. And I think that's probably the most frustrating thing about the market, is realizing that when you see reality start to set in, when you start seeing prices that make some sense, you probably want to buckle up because that's about to change. Right? Rationality and sound accounting and sound valuations and fundamentals, they don't have anything to do with this, and they haven't had for a very long time. Now, there's obviously exceptions. But for the most part, those exceptions aren't driving the market, right? Look at Apple. Look at the earnings multiple, or look at the multiple on Apple stock. Everybody talks about the big run-up Apple had. Here's what happened. Apple had traded pretty regularly between a 15 to 20 price to earnings multiple over its entire ascension, going back to 2002-2003. And even through its giant run up, it was all earnings fueled. Right? It wasn't multiple expansion. The value of the company wasn't going up. Like I said, it kind of bounced around pretty steadily between a 15 to 20 price to earnings ratio. Then they announced the stock split. That price to earnings ratio has now changed. It's basically doubled. It trades between like 30 to 40 price to earnings because they split their stock. And that's just a perfect anecdotal example of this market. And it makes sense as far as the market's concerned, right? It's not insane. That's the way this market works. And when the market decides it's going to re-rate something, like say, you know, we've decided now that Apple at its biggest, when its earnings have slowed the most and its revenue growth has slowed the most and all those other things, now's the time we're going to double the multiple on it. And you can fight it and get in the way all you want. But I mean, until this fever breaks and... You know, judging by the action we see today, again, I'm recording on a Thursday. I gotta head out of town tomorrow. But judging by the action I see on Thursday, I mean, you've got the S&P just closed at a fresh new all-time high. You got the Russell 3000 closed at a new all-time high. You have the Wilshire 5000 closed at a new all-time high. Dow Jones is just below it. NASDAQ is about 1% away from an all-time high. Now, it's got to prove it. You got to get above that. I think it's interesting that tomorrow's Friday. Part of me is expecting to see a big up day tomorrow, just because why not? And break to new all-time highs. But this is really interesting. This is the point that we've been waiting for, right? Meaning, I didn't... backstrap is... And here's why I laugh, you guys. To watch multiples expanding on tech companies... And all of these different business, not even just tech, just whatever fancies people, you watch these multiples rolling up on these companies that have really big, significant input costs, and all their input costs are rising, meaning they're going to be less profitable going forward as long as inflation's a problem. Market doesn't care. And it won't till it does, and it still doesn't. If you're looking for the fever to break on this market and for things to make sense, it's just we're not there. So don't go fighting it. Don't go loading up shorts. Don't fight it. Right? Like, for instance, you look at NASDAQ, there's no way I'm shorting the NASDAQ until I see a close below 14,200. Bottom line. And that's why we didn't put a short on the NASDAQ in this last dip, because it got down to like 14.3. And I had buddies that were putting on shorts and I went, nope, you got to show me you're going to break. Well, yeah, Zach, but you look at this, do you look at that? Guys, data hasn't mattered for a really long time. If you want to think it does all of a sudden now, be my guest, but I'm going to make it prove it to me. Right. And I think today is a great example, you guys, of why we need to be weary. Right. You know my thoughts on energy. You know my thoughts on uranium. The macro winds are blowing so stiffly behind that. Even if you don't look at the energy sector, right, even if we don't get the full magnitude of the energy crisis that we think is possible, right, at the very least, you're going to have pressure on supplies over the next year and a half as people are building back up stockpiles. Right, because you don't need to just facilitate consumption, which if markets are right, right, and this tech rally is showing that markets are just going to keep rolling and the economy, you know, if inflation isn't going to be a problem and rates going up isn't a problem and we're going to stay in this this catatonic state where nothing matters, nothing of reality matters anyway, and that what you need to do is you need to sell things that you know have real value and buy things that you know that don't. As long as that stays in play and you close to new all-time highs, you know, like on the NASDAQ and the S&P, you can't, like I said, we've got to look for levels. And this is the tough thing about navigating bubbles, guys. This is the tough thing about navigating environments like this. You know, if you get out too soon, you risk massive underperformance. And I think that this time that means more because it's really hard to know. You know, it's hard to know what's driving this. I mean, like, again, right now, if inflation was the singular problem, you should see those high flyers getting. Anyway, my whole point is this. We're not going to know until we see the movements. And I wish that there was a more fundamental, concrete answer I could give you at which way this one breaks. But there's just no way to know because you have two conflicting things. You have fundamentals and macroeconomic headwinds that are driving the kind of stuff that we're mostly concentrated in. Okay. And then you have a price stock investing, collecting, you know, largest financial mania of all kind happening on the other side of it. So what I'm saying is I wouldn't expect the market to be giving us very clear signals about what's going on right now because of those conflicting things. Right. Right up until the point that things break and start getting messy on the inflation side, whether it's called by an energy caused by an energy crisis or whatever the case may be, right up until the point that happens, I would expect to see energy look, undeservingly dicey, and I would expect tech and growth to look very tempting. Right up until the time that relationship breaks. And that's what I was saying of, you know, last week joking around that this knife fight's going to press all the way to the limits because that's where we're at, right? So you got the 10-year yield closing right up on that 1.7 line that caused so much upset in tech earlier, and it should be, and it's just not this time. Tech's rallying right up with rates, which makes zero sense. And it's just common sense, guys. As rates go higher, valuations have to come down. The reason that's so important is because the NASDAQ makes up such a weight. So to me, none of these technicals really mean anything until we see the NASDAQ break out and hold that level for probably 4 to 5 trading days. Now, if those of you out there listening to me are going, I thought you're about risk management. I thought you're about value. You are. We are. But guys, I got to look at the market for what it is. This is not a market that's fundamentally driven. How is it driven? It's driven via technicals and momentum. That's just the reality of it. It doesn't mean that I'm going to let that influence the things I own. But it does mean this, that I need to be careful about going in there and quote unquote buying value and buying things of real value, not in the long-term outlook. Right? I've told you before, I think that there's a lot of energy and material companies out there. That it doesn't make any sense. Like, for instance, let's get into copper, right? If all of these, right, if Tesla's price, if there's anything realistic about Tesla's price, copper has to go way higher, way higher. Because remember, the extrapolation or the proliferation of EVs doesn't just mean EVs, which require 5 to 7 times more copper than traditional, and there's just not enough copper in the world for that, but it's also going to require a complete overhaul and rebuild of the grid. You can't take 25 to 40 million cars off the roads and slap on today's grid. You'd bring the whole thing down. Right? That's the stuff that kind of bakes my brain where I'm like, look, if you're right, what are you going to do with this? Here's the other thing. The EV companies, these ridiculous valuations, right? All the things that they need to put into those cars, including copper, those prices are going up. And you're not seeing that reflected at all in the valuations. But like I said, you cannot be one of those blockheaded investors like I was earlier in my career. Just buy value. Yes, we're going to look for value. But I also want to be careful because value can get a lot cheaper. Right? There's nothing saying that XOP or the energy stocks couldn't get slammed by 25 or 30%. I don't think it'll happen. It certainly shouldn't. But guys, there's stuff that shouldn't happen in this market all every day. And this kind of gets into the whole not bringing your politics into investing. Same kind of thing. We got to play the game in front of us. We have to. Now, and why do I care? Well, because I manage other people's money, right? And like I said, the other thing is it's not, a lot of these energy companies that we're talking about, if we're talking about buying them today and holding them for the next 5 to 7 years, which is probably a responsible timeline to be looking at things on, I have zero concerns about owning them long term. I just also have zero confidence that they couldn't take another 50% hit. I mean, and if you want to know what I'm talking about, go look. Let's take a company like Continental Resources, okay? If you look at Continental Resources, ticker CLR, okay, go look at the price of their stock prior to COVID, right? We're looking at $60, $65 oil. I believe CLR, Continental Resources, right around $65 to $70 a share. You got oil at 85. You got nat gas that has tripled. Continental, I think 30% of their output, 20 or 30% of their output is nat gas. Stock's still trading at a, what would you be at? Let's see, 15, 30. You're still trading at a 30 to 40% discount to where you were the last time oil was at 65. Oil's at 82. Same time gas was like at 2.5. It's now at 5.5. Now, I'm also not telling you to go out and buy Continental Resources because it's entirely possible it could take a 25 to 30% header in this market. And these are the things that people out there looking for value and looking at the things that we want to own, they have to remember. And it's not about whether we're scared to own it long term. It's about if it's got a 25 to 30 or even greater percent pullback in front of it, I want to make sure I'm not loaded up here so I can buy more. Because, you know, it's only a matter of time. We all know the realities on the fossil fuel side. And for those of you out there, I had an interesting call from a gentleman that I had a nice conversation with on the investing side. And he has concerns about owning fossil fuel companies. And he has concerns, some desire about wanting to be more of an ESG investor. And for those of you that don't know, ESG is this new big push Wall Street is making for environmentally, socially, and corporate governance, right? Responsible companies that are good in all of that, all of those categories. Okay, I'm going to give you guys a warning on this, and I mean this 100%. ESG is a scam, okay? Not all ESG companies are. ESG in itself is a scam as far as the investing side of it goes. And let me give you two examples. And I've said this on the show before, but I want you to understand what I mean, okay? What is the purpose, the way it's sold to us? Why is it that, how is it pitched to us to sell into ESG? We got to save the environment. We got to lower carbon emissions. We got to do all those things, right? Well, if you look at the methodology for how a lot of these ESG companies are evaluated, right? Because we're not evaluating them toward earnings. We're not evaluating them toward profitability. We're not looking at their fundamentals. We're not looking at their balance sheets. We're looking at their environmental impact, their social impact, and corporate governance. Okay, when you run the S&P 500 companies through their methodology, three or four fossil fuel companies come up ranked in the top 15. Okay, why is that? It's because they're the ones investing the most heavy in green energy, for the most part. Right? They're investing a lot more into green energy than most of these green energy companies are. And it makes sense, right? They're the ones with the most cash and they're the ones with the most to lose. They're the ones who are looking at an existential threat. They've got to pivot. That's what companies do. So you want to starve the companies from capital? I actually think those are the companies that we should be cheering on. They're the ones with the balance sheet. They're the ones with the revenue. They're the ones with the profit that can actually deploy money. They're the ones with the experience of running profitable energy type companies. It's a different form of energy, but a lot of the transmission of energy, a lot of these things are true. These guys are the experts. They're the ones with the cash. Why would you want to starve them of capital just because their current source of capital comes from fossil fuels, which we still need to keep people alive? Right? If we were choosing fossil fuel over cold fusion, which we kind of are with nuclear, right? But if we were just deciding, no, you know what? Screw the environment. We just want to. That's not what's happening. And here's the other thing. Keep in mind, when you put money with a company, even if you know, I don't want to support fossil fuel. You're not supporting a fossil fuel company by owning the stock. That money you paid for the stock doesn't go to the company. It goes to the other shareholder you bought the stock from. Okay. And why do I say it's a scam? The other part of it's a scam is this: Wall Street's really smart. You know why they're all behind this and pushing it? Because A, they can charge more because it's an ESG fund, right? They can charge more, and guess what? They're not accountable for performance. What's their benchmark? It's not the S&P 500. They underperformed the S&P 500 by 50% over a 10-year period of time. Hey, I can tell you what they'll say. This is ESG. It's not about profitability. This is about making the world a better place. Guys, think about it. It is a money manager's dream. I get to charge more in fees and I'm not accountable for performance. That's the way this is going down. And that's what I'm saying. If we want real ESG investing, I'll tell you where it is. It's in uranium. It's in copper, right? It's in natural gas. The hatred on natural gas is going to come out too, just because I've struggled with this for years on the natural gas side, sitting there going, listen, I understand you don't like fossil fuels, but if you converted all the coal-fired power plants in the world to burning natural gas, the world would be a heck of a lot cleaner place. I'm not saying that's the ultimate solution, but shouldn't we baby step our way to this? But my whole point is saying this is why you can't be a riverboat gambler. And this is why, in my opinion, you got to pay attention to the entire market. And it's not because I'm worried about owning these names at these valuations over the long run. It's because I want to be careful because the market, as crazy as it is and as irrational it is, it very well could give us an opportunity to buy these things at a lot lower price. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that macroeconomic facts and reality will win out just because you can't print your way past in a commodity crunch. But we could have a milder winter than I think. And this is why I'm saying I still love when I look at the downside on energy, when I look at it at this price. Now, if you had oil at 100, 120, I think it would be a lot more risky. But like I said, if the economy just keeps going, if nothing bad happens or no other issues or no other, right? Oil demand will be higher next year than it was this year. Natural gas demand will be higher. Coal demand will be higher. All that kind of stuff, right? On top of that higher natural demand, as more economies continue to open up, you've got people restocking supplies, restocking inventories. That's going to put additional pressure on it. It's just hard for me to imagine looking out at the, you know, barring another complete shutdown that's COVID related. I guess you could probably see that. I don't think that's likely, but it's possible. But yeah, I think that we got to be careful here. We got to watch these levels on the market. And, you know, I think these are times that people need to be really careful. It's where, you know, I talk about it all the time. It comes down to risk management because here's the deal. Inflation is a funny thing, guys. And I want to talk about that a little bit more in the next segment. But anyway, we've gone a little bit over here. Got to close this one up. We're going to get to the next segment. Do another conversation about inflation because it's going to attack it from a little bit different angle than we have in the past because I think there's so many misconceptions about it. And I continue to be reminded of those misconceptions on a regular basis based on questions from clients, questions from listeners, things of that nature. So we're going to get a little bit more into that. Anyway, as always, guys, if you're looking at this stuff, if you're watching all this stuff going on, you're sitting there going, you know, I don't really know where I should be. I'm not sure, you know, what risks are and you know, this looks crazy to me. And because, you know, prices are so high and these prices don't make sense and valuations yet at the same time, the Fed, I don't know what to do. And I'm afraid of, right. It's all that back and forth. You know what the answer to it all, guys, is it's risk management. It really is. It's the only way to navigate tight situations like this. And if you do it correctly, that's why our value portfolio just hit a high water mark of up 39.5% on the year. Risk management. Not because we're the smartest guys in the room, it's because we're managing risk, which makes sure that we have capital to buy when things get cheap, which makes sure we don't take nearly as big a hits when the market goes down. All the while with lower fees, lower risk, there's a better way to do it. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Stick with us. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. All right. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. All right. Another little conversation on inflation. And this is, as I've told you guys before, I think that this is ground zero. And the reason why I think it's ground zero is because if this inflation is transitory, if this inflation, now you guys know me, okay, you know my thoughts. I don't think it is transitory. Not completely. I think there are parts of it that will prove to be. Just because I think you're going to have the illusion of inflation in certain places that is simply just supply chain, and that supply chain is just, you know, it's just upset, right? It'll get worked out. Then you're going to have other supply chains that, although the supply chain itself might get worked out, it's still straining because the consumption of that good has gone higher, right? The demand for that good has gone higher. And yet that good has not been invested in, right? Energy is a classic example. But basically, if you look at energy markets, there has been very little to no net investment over the last 10 years. And a lot of that investment got wiped out in the last 2 years. All right, so your capacity in the most recent years to produce, mainly due to U.S. markets and U.S. shale, has actually gone down while population and demand continues to climb. And that's why all this peak oil, it reminds me so much of peak oil, right? We're running out of oil. That was the justification for $140 oil in 2007. Now we don't need it. It's still funny to say that. And that's the justification, right? So like I've said before, this is just kind of the natural other end of the deal. Another end of the range, right? It's just the flip side of this, of what we've seen already. This absolutism tied to a commodity price like oil that, regardless of what happens, the world's still going to need. But the reason that the inflation thing is really important is because if this inflation cycle has started in earnest now, regardless of short-term movements in the market, rest assured that inflation will upset this liquidity and Fed and government-driven market. It will. And it will because it's going to reroute the way capital moves around the economy. And I've explained that before. The other thing is, when you have a sector that is so overweight, like tech and growth, like no other sector has ever been, and you have a sector that is so underweight, energy, and then you start looking at materials in general, all the things that are sensitive to inflation that have not been needed for the last 10 years because there hasn't been any inflation, right? When you see that setup, that if that inflation kicks in, investors will begin to grab it, okay? Regardless of what all these people say, like I put out a tweet and said, look, all these people can talk about divestment. When oil gets to 120 to 150 a barrel, they will all be buying it. They will have to, right? All of their moral, you know, carbon footprint, all that talk goes out the window when it starts hurting their P&L. And that's not being a cynic, guys. That's just me telling you the way it is. What people need to realize, and this goes back to the ESG thing that we were talking about in the last segment. I know why investors are looking at ESG, because they think it's a good thing. I get it. But you're just being had. That's what Wall Street does. Nothing is altruistic. They're trying to make money. Okay, so you don't need to be worried about what you think of ESG. You need to be worried and concerned and knowledgeable about what Wall Street thinks about ESG, and they're licking their chops. But getting back to the main, I don't want to digress. Getting back to the main thrust of what I was going to be talking about on the inflationary side, is that I think that that process has started. Now, I think that there are two ways that it can go about progressing from here. I think that inflation just continues to ramp. I can see the avenue from here of how that would happen. I don't think that's going to be the way it plays out, but it could. But like I said, I think what you're going to see, what is the most likely outcome to me, is kind of these rolling, and it could be as short as 3 and 6 month intervals. These rolling inflationary pressures, Fed maybe steps off the gas, lets the dollar float a little higher, lets rates float a little higher. So that way they can quote unquote, because in their mind, they're thinking the same thing too. If I want to fight inflation, especially in commodity prices, one of the easiest ways to do it is not to necessarily raise the Fed funds rate, but take your thumb off the scale, let rates climb a little bit, maybe curtail your asset purchases, right? Slow down quantitative easing a little bit. That way you can still say you're being supportive of the market, let the dollar rally a little bit, and that should knock down energy prices. Now, I don't know that that's what the Fed is doing. When I watch this very orderly lift in rates, it makes me think they could be. I don't know. When I look at the stubbornness of the DXY, where is that trading by the way? Let's pull that up. I haven't looked at that in a couple days. Let's see where we're at on the DXY. For those of you who don't know, DXY is a dollar index. Basically, it's not the best indicator out there because the index is overwhelmingly the euro, but it still is the one that looks. You still have the DXY above 93. It's pulled back a little bit. It was above 94, you know, a week and a half ago or so. But really, it's pretty moving in a pretty tight range. That's odd, just because you got the dollar, you know, you got DXY rolling between 93.5 and 94.5. You wouldn't expect to see equity markets breaking out at the same time. You certainly wouldn't expect to see commodity prices going out at the same time. One of the things that I'm thinking about is about what tools does the Fed have to fight this? As crazy as this sounds, if this energy crisis plays out the way that we think it will, I actually think that you could continue to see rates, energy, and the dollar continue to go higher together. And it could create a really nasty cycle. Not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm saying I'm watching for that because I think that that is possible. But getting back to what I said, when I say I think the inflationary cycle has gone, what I mean by that is this: that the Fed and the U.S. government and central banks around the world are all in. Okay, the only way they keep markets and asset prices in this range is if they continue to support things. Okay, they got to keep the flow of new money coming into the system. They've got to stay in. Okay, now they'll make you know assertions and statements about how they're going to pull back and it's not going to work. The reason for that is this market is not reflective of economic reality. The market is reflective of printed money, right? So printed money will continue to push things along, in my opinion, until the inflation becomes a real problem. And then I think that what you'll see is the Fed, as that stuff ramps, they may be doing it right now. I was just saying it with rates. They'll kind of take their thumb off the scale, let the dollar float higher, let rates float a little higher, thinking that will tame commodity prices. And I don't think it's going to work because commodity prices are not going up because of the dollar. Commodity prices are going up because of supply and demand. It's very simple. Now, what's interesting to me is that supply and demand mechanism could easily create a spike on the dollar because it could apply a lot of financial stress to a lot of companies' balance sheets. And these are the things that I'm looking for. I'm looking for when reality takes the keys away from central banks, because until the inflation is a problem, as frustrating as this can be for so many investors, guys, there is no resistance to the upside on the stock market. As expensive as it is, it can be a lot more expensive. And that's the reality of it. So I think the most likely path forward is to have these, you know, kind of rolling inflation, you know what I mean? Like, and all the while trending higher. I think actually a pretty good chart of that is if you look at energy prices over the last month, pull up the XOP. There's some really nasty days and you pop into the beginning and you sell off as it goes. And as an investor in that stuff, you feel like it's not going well, but then you pull up the chart, you realize the trend is still up. It's kind of one of those head fake type deals. And it really, in my opinion, it's very reflective of something that is hated that has begun to rally. So that gives me hope. That gives me a feeling that we're on the right track. But then we also have to be conscious of the underlying weakness. I look at the whole picture. I look at what the rolling off of the unemployment claims or the extra assistance from the government. I look at that rolling off. I look at increased Social Security benefits. I just look at this whole setup and I can't see anything but an inflationary setup. Now, that doesn't mean that that has to be what occurs. Like I said, it could be this rolling. But I do think we've turned the table, meaning you either get inflation to take off here, or governments have to keep just printing money. And then eventually it will take root. What I'm saying is I'm not extremely confident that the inflation cycle has really started. But what I do think has started is the path that takes us there. Meaning they know for financial stability reasons, they know that any volatility that sneaks into this market, any problems that sneak into this market, they have to be standing at the ready. They got to be ready to pump. And if you're not buying that, I don't know what you're buying. I mean, that's just the way it's worked. And that's why I think that we need to be very flexible with what our idea of inflation is. Remember, inflation does not mean the currency collapses and gold goes to the ceiling. That is one thing that has happened during previous inflationary periods, but many of them are different. And if you think you can just buy gold and silver and be insulated, you're wrong. It doesn't work that way. That is a misconception. That's a misconception right up there with stocks and bonds work inversely of each other. Can they? Yes, they have for long periods of time. Do they historically? No. It's a misnomer. And for that matter, in this world, I want to own, looking at the inflation threat that I'm looking at right now, gold and silver aren't my go-tos for this type of inflation, not yet. And they haven't broken out. I'll wait till they break out. I want things that are economically necessary. I want things that people have to purchase. They got to buy and that are crimped, like copper, like uranium, like oil, like natural gas, like coal. And I know for some of you, the fossil fuel, oh, that's bad. No, it's not. They're legal businesses, guys, and we can't power our grid any other way. So if you don't like fossil fuel, you got to take a step back. You're letting emotions and things that are non-factual get into your investment outlook. When you buy shares of a company like that, you're not helping them, A. And buying shares of a company like that are the only ways to insulate yourself. One of the only ways to insulate yourself, if you're worried about inflation, that's the only way to really do it. You can't buy 3 years worth of oil and store it on your property. I mean, I guess you could. You wouldn't be able to refine it. You wouldn't be able to make fuel out of it. And they're necessary, guys. We're not choosing between fossil fuels, clean energy, and dirty energy. We don't have a choice right now. And that's, so that's kind of why I'm saying is I'm looking at places where, where there's real need, there's real demand, where you can't fake it. And gold and silver just aren't there yet. And I think they'll join the party at some point. But this is what I'm telling people. You look at a portfolio that's guarded against inflation. If that's a concern for you, you need a lot more than oil and silver or gold and silver. You need a lot more. And like I've told you, I can run you through inflationary scenario after inflationary scenario. And I'll show you in each and every one, the things that appreciate the most are unique to those circumstances. It's the thing that is needed most, that is least supplied. So in every economy, that's different. There isn't a D, all of the above. And people treat silver and gold like that. And I'm afraid for those investors because I think silver and gold is part of a portfolio to insulate yourself from inflation. But there's going to be a lot of people, and this is what we talk about all the time, that get the inflation call right. A lot of private investors, retail investors that get it right, that see the inflation coming, so they load up on silver and gold and they don't catch anywhere near what they should have, right? They get the macro call right, inflation is coming, and they bet on the wrong horse. You got to spread your bets around. And if you want to know how to do that, if you want people that have navigated inflationary markets before, if you want people that have you know, that are looking at these kind of things, that realize you can't just ride this market because pain is coming. Whether that's 2 years down the road, 2 months, who knows? Like I said, we could be on the verge of it right now. I'm not saying I think it's likely. I'm not predicting economic doom or Armageddon. And, you know, a tip of the cap, if you're out there running around with an unrisk managed portfolio and you feel like just taking this stuff on and buying all this crazy stuff, tip of the cap, you're a lot braver than I am. Unfortunately, in this game, bravery is always met with fatal wounds, right? Now, that's not what people are worried about right now, but it should be. And if you want people that understand how to navigate this stuff, that understand those bets that you've got to lay out, right, that can find you those things like Peabody Energy that we made, you know, 6 times our money on in 4 months and things of that nature, and obviously they don't all turn out that way. But what you're really looking for, if that resonates with you, you're looking for a risk management strategy. Call us, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can just start with our Common Sense Investment Booklet, guys. It walks you through our bond replacement. You get an idea of what we mean by risk management, what we mean by lower risk, higher returns. You realize that we don't have to, quote unquote, time the market. We weren't timing the market last year when we put in hedges that kept us from going down, you know, kept us down 11% when the market was down 36. There's a better way to do it. Call us, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, download and subscribe to the podcast. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back for the closing segment. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently, one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. All right, a little bit different now because we are getting so close, meaning that this knife fight that we've been watching now for the last 6 months is coming to its natural conclusion, meaning everything is pressed to the max. Something's got to give. I do not think all of these things will continue to, or will trade in a 1-2% range. Something's got to give. Either the inflation threat is real and the energy crisis is, and those don't have to go together, but I think they're somewhat of a paired deal right now. But, you know, the NASDAQ's going to break out to new all-time highs. And if it does, and if it sustains it, I would expect in the short term for it to put pressure on the inflationary trade. And guys, that's just kind of a part of markets, meaning, you know, I think and we've talked about this a lot too, but I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is look at quotes and numbers on the market every day and think that that's real value. It's not. And that markets are dominated by flows, meaning that the price goes up where the money's flowing to. And if the NASDAQ breaks out again, you've got just a lot of muscle memory. I would expect it to be going to new, probably substantially higher highs. Yeah, I don't think it should happen. I mean, but it doesn't mean anything, right? This is one of the things is when you're managing money, you got to be agnostic. This is why I tell people to keep your emotions out of it. Keep your politics out of it. It clouds the vision. Right? And if you notice, my answer is consistent on that, whether we're talking about ESG, whether we're saying to buy the market because Trump's going to make, right? Those are kind of opposite ends of it. Well, you know, people, well, buy the market because Trump's going to be in there. Sell the market because Biden's going to be in there. Nope. Those are it's politics crowding your investment outlook, right? Thinking ESG is the way to go. Nope. That's politics crowding your investment outlook. That's two sides of the same coin there. And this game is hard enough. And it's never been harder. And by that, I just mean you have never seen so many disparities in a market where certain things are just valued to just insane nosebleed levels and other things that are actually needed. Real stuff is just completely ignored. And that's where we're at right now. So my advice would be, if we see a breakout and an ability for NASDAQ to hold against that previous all-time high for another week or so, if you've got those energy trades on, you should probably pull back on the reins a little bit. Now, I wouldn't dump it because the long-term value is so incredible. I would just pull back on the reins a little bit to make sure you got some dry powder to buy it to buy at lower prices. Now, if the NASDAQ takes a swoon and energy breaks out again from this little range it's been in, you know, so a move on the XOP to like 109, 110 or something like that, then the game is on for what we've been, that you know, that setup that we've been looking for, where, you know, really, you know, something that really causes people to start moving from one side of the boat to the other. Because in my opinion, what you have seen on the inflationary plays, the energy plays, is just what happens when something has been completely abandoned and capital starts flowing. Remember, you know, if money is just drained from a sector and for whatever reason money just starts coming back in, typically you see a wham, right? A big move up. And it's just because there's no sellers left, right? There's no sell pressure. And I kind of think that that's what we've seen in energy markets thus far. I think it's just the easy money has been made. And I think you can look at that because these things are not moving in a way. You know, the energy stocks, if they stay at this level, what that would tell me is that the market thinks that energy is already overshot. I just can't get there from here. Now, maybe it doesn't go crazy like we think it could, but I don't think it's overshot at all. I don't think $80 oil is overshooting at all. And I mean, if you get prices much below 80 bucks, I just don't think you're going to be able to meet demand. I just think supply and demand will force it higher from there. Now we all know it's a commodity. It can do crazy stuff. I'm not saying it couldn't go back down to 55. I don't think it will, speaking about oil again, but it could. Commodities are crazy things. But I really think, once again, I've been saying this for weeks now, and it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. I literally think that we will have a lot more clarity by next Friday, come one way or the other. It might be clarity that we don't like. It might be clarity that does not align with our long-term view. And by our, I don't mean you and mine. I mean us here at Bulwark. But if that happens, you better believe we're going to manage that risk, and we're going to pull back exposure on the inflationary side. We're going to keep a real tight eye on it. But you guys, that's another part of risk management, is watching the technicals and stuff like this. You got to look at all of it. You got to look at the fundamentals. In a market like this that is so off the rails, you got to grab onto every piece of information you can to help you manage that risk. And one of the easy ways to do it is when we've got something, like I said, we talked about this before, right? That XOP. We've got that line in the sand where we'll be overweight a sector as long as that sector stays in a range that we feel comfortable with. If it falls out of that sector, we'll pare back our bet. If it goes back above, if it falls out of that range, we'll pare back. If it goes back into that range, we'll put some size back on. It's not perfect, but it's really the only way to manage risk in a market that's completely unfundamentally driven. And what you can't do, and I understand the intellectual attractiveness of this approach, is just go, I'm going to ignore it all and I'm going to continue to look at value. Guys, there's nothing that resonates with my heart more than somebody saying that. The problem is, like I've said to you, that isn't the way this market works. We got to adapt to it. And the way we do it without also exposing ourselves to catastrophic losses is a very hard and stringent risk management plan. And if we do it correctly, that risk-managed value portfolio of ours is knocking on the door of 40% up this year. It doesn't have to mean lower returns. When done correctly, it means better returns. There is a better way to do this. Spend the 3 minutes required to give us a call and educate yourselves. You can get better returns, taking less risk, paying less in fees. There is a better way. I say it every week. I'm a broken record. But I continue to have these calls with clients. They're like, Zach, you know, I knew that we were looking at the risk. I just didn't think we could make this much. You go, look, you know, we're not going to make 40% every year. That's not realistic. But yes, we don't have to risk everything to make great returns. And that's not what the majority of you are doing anyway. The majority of you are looking for good conservative returns that outpace inflation without risking all your capital. Gosh darn it. That's what we do. And you currently, that's not what you do. So have a portfolio that aligns with what it is you're trying to do. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. You know all the details. Follow me at Twitter, at KYRRadio. We got to run. We're out of time. We'll see you next week. Watch those levels I've been telling you about, guys. They should be big. Anyway, have a great weekend. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.